not those lions. Three lions we can get behind.
And he hoofed it.
There's more pressure being ratcheted up with a loss like that, of course.
Just getting the head boxed off, should that just kind of happen.
For all your Lions coverage this summer, download the OTB Sports app.
David Myler, good morning to you.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How's your singing voice?
My voice is fine.
Yeah, well, let's just see how this goes, right? You might build up to it. A little bit of peer pressure, a little bit of encouragement.
I won't crack under peer pressure. Don't worry about that.
As a matter of interest, when you had to do your
initiation song.
Yeah, what was it?
Sugar Hill Gang, Rappers Delute.
All right. Good call. I'm impressed.
I'd sing that 100 times. Like, more than sing Italian, though, because I don't speak Italian.
Look, no one watching this morning is going to know that you're wrong. Come here, what did you make of it, really? Like, what was your emotions at the very end?
Well, I said it at the start. I tipped Italy to win. I still fancied Italy. Obviously, England had, you know, great momentum going in. They just had this kind of feel-good factor. It was in Wembley, I think. It was a fierce amount of pressure on that group of players and obviously the manager. You can just see from the reaction of them losing, like, it was only a matter of time. Anyone from the outside will know that fans, country itself, would have gone into meltdown if they'd lost. And they have, like, you can see with the abuse that Saka, Rashford and Sancho are receiving. People are questioning every single decision Gareth Southgate made in the game. They're talking about the lads coming on for penalties. It's just typical... A typical reaction to a loss. But then 3 days ago, you know, Gareth Southgate was the greatest man ever manage England. So it's one of those you take with a pinch of salt.
I think Southgate tried to win the game with the penalty substitutions. Maybe he would have been better served to try and win the game at the start of extra time and make those substitutions. He didn't, right? But with the substitutions, it's like, I'm trying to win this, and it's an aggressive move as opposed to a defensive move. And it didn't come off. Like, that's the whole point. There's going to be a winner and a loser in sport. And maybe there were better players to take penalties. That's possible. We can have a conversation about that. But the decision itself is, I think, like, what's the point in being in these competitions if you're not going to try and win them?
No, 100%. And I think that when Gareth looks back and eventually he'll watch the game back, I think for them, it scored after 2 minutes, obviously. It's a great goal from Luke Shaw. And then it kind of validated his reasoning for going with the five at the back, because obviously Trippier gets the assist. But I think that was the moment where England, they sat back then and they tried to defend the lead for large periods. Like, it was almost that, you know, cliche, you score too soon. I was hoping that England would kind of like kick on in the game and kind of like, you know, you've got the goal, you're ahead. Now can we push them? Like, you knew Italy obviously were going to have to come back to try and get back into the game. We never really saw England catch them on the counter-attack or were able to put, you know, 3-4 good passes together in, you know, the Italian half to kind of get Sterling on the break or, you know, get Harry Kane involved. It was very much one of those games where they tried to defend for, you know, the whole thing. It was always going to be very difficult because you knew that Italy were always going to create probably two good chances, and it was just whether or not they're going to take them. Like, the goal is a scrappy set piece that, you know, they just react better than England. I think that would be the big thing. Like, you can talk, of course, about the penalties. I think with Rashford, I don't think he's right in terms of his body. We saw that at the Europa League final, obviously, when he came out saying that he's been playing with an injury. I think that's been, you know, the main reason why he's not played as much for England this Euros. I think after... You know, after they celebrate, they spend time with their families. I think he's going to have surgery straight away on that shoulder. But it's a difficult one because obviously he'll have looked last night. Gareth will have looked last night. You know, when it was coming, probably the 115th minute, somebody will have said, "Have we got five penalty takers on the pitch?" And then he'll have known who he wanted to take penalties. That's why he brought on, you know, Sancho and Rashford. I had a similar incident years ago, albeit it's not the same. Like, standard in terms of the Euros final, but we played the League Cup against Leicester. I'll never forget, like Steve Bruce said, have we got five penalty takers? And we had four fellas who were comfortable taking penalties. And I remember he turned to the bench and said, will anyone come on and take a penalty? And I said, I will. So I literally just stood up from the bench, took my tracksuit bottoms off, walked up, went on like right wing, our goalkeeper took a kick out, went straight to penalties. I took the fifth penalty and scored, and we won. I scored the winning penalty. So, like, it has been done. This whole idea of, you know, players not being warmed up, I don't really buy that. I just think the penalties were poor. I think that's the biggest problem that they had.
Would they not have given you one of the middle penalties, second or third, so there's room to recover as opposed to the last one? I think that's the other point, though, that, like, you know, if you're confident Kane and Maguire are going to score, put Maguire out first, put Kane fourth or fifth, you hope that it gets that far. And let Saka take one early if he's going to take one. Let Sancho take the first one maybe, so there's time to recover from these.
Look, I know what you mean, but it's also, do you not stick your best penalty takers first,
get
second,
the
and third?
Yeah.
It is such a difficult one. Like, you know, that's, and if you win, you're right, and if you lose, you're wrong. Like Rashford's one is probably the most frustrating one out of three, because he's watching the keeper. He does like almost everything right, then he puts the ball off the post. Like, you know, it's kind of, come on, you know. I'm not a big fan of that run up and Jorginho's run up. I just don't like it. I'm more of a Harry Maguire style myself. But look, it's one of those you can dissect it any way you want. Could he have done this? Could he have done that? At the end of the day, look, those young lads put their hands forward, stood up, you know, and took penalties. There's been a lot of talk, obviously, Saka being such a young boy, going ahead of other players.
Yeah, what do you make of that? Because that is, I think there's definitely some room for conversation around, like, since the Europa League final, everybody's conscious of the fact that you can go the whole way through, right? This could end up with the goalkeeper. So, but we know that the first five are absolutely key. And in that first five, there are kids like Sancho. Okay, he's a £100 million footballer, or £70 million, whatever it is that Man United have paid. And Saka is obviously a superstar in the making and has leapt forward in the last 18 months in terms of where his career is. But they are kids compared to the pressure that some of the other players have been and carried in their careers, like Sterling, you know, and like Grealish. They're the two that got name-checked, particularly by Roy Keane in the aftermath last night. I have a lot of sympathy for what Keane says. It's like, you know, maybe they haven't been taking penalties at St. George's Park in the penalty shootouts, the competitions that they've been running to see who's more likely to score or not. But they're the ones with experience. They're the ones who've captained teams and been there and done that.
No, I agree with you. Like, with all of them will have taken penalties at St. George's Park. They'll have all practiced. We did it with Ireland in the Euros in 16. We all practiced. So I imagine all of them will have practiced. The thing is, it's kind of like Gareth, if you've seen any of his post-match interviews, he's kind of said, like, look, I picked these players. It was my decision, you know. Is there a certain case that, you know, Sterling could have said, look, I want to take one? Of course. But you don't, like, unless you're privy to that conversation, we don't know exactly how it went down. Like, before he gets into the huddle, Gareth might have said, like, these are the five I'm picking to take penalties, you know. And it's, and it kind of comes down to that almost leadership quality that Sterling would go, no, look, Gareth, I want to take one. Put me forward to take one. We don't know. But at the same time, I think it was Mark Pugarch, the host on ITV, he had said, like, Grealish hasn't taken a penalty in a competitive game in 2 years, which he missed. Sterling's last penalty was in a shootout that they won for Manchester City, like, I don't know, was it 2 years ago as well? So there's been a long period for them of taking penalties. So, yes, they are experienced, but are they penalty takers? But at the same time, it's disappointing. You know, you kind of want your older, experienced players to kind of step forward and go, I'll take one. A bit like, you know, Harry Maguire going second, like Harry Kane wanted to take one. There was a lot of talk before that Jordan Pickford might take penalties. He didn't take one. So you're going through everything now, like, and that's what's going to happen.
100%. And also as well, David, just like, I definitely think there's some revisionism on Grealish and Sterling and their penalty prowess going on this morning. Like the Sterling thing, like you'll remember he fired one over the bar against Brighton earlier this year. And just kind of going back, reading reports around that time, Raheem Sterling continued his poor run of penalties on Wednesday, becoming the first Premier League player in more than 3 years to miss three in a row. So we're not exactly talking great statistics here. And I'm sure this is something that was maybe agreed before the match. Would I be right in saying that you take the emotion out of it completely and you have your five to 11 players, whatever, picked beforehand, and ideally you would want those 11 players to be on the pitch at that moment.
Well, in my experience, Gareth won't have told the players that we're going to take penalties until penalty shootout, just because you don't want them to be thinking of, you know, you want them to be thinking about it or anything. Like, you'll know that Harry Kane is taking one, you know, I would have backed Sterling to take one myself personally, but Gareth will have known. That's why he made the double substitution to get those players on, because he looked around at the pitch and says, I'm not happy with all the players, you know, to going forward and take penalties, so I'm making changes. Like, it's such a difficult one, because obviously, you know, the two lads who come on both miss, so looks like he got it all wrong.
Why did Southgate's team selection have so much success early in the first half, and then what changed?
I think what changed was they left Italy grow back into the game. Like, they had scored obviously straight away. They were getting great joy down, you know, from the wing backs in those areas. They were able to, you know, when Italy high press, they were able to turn over the ball and switch it round. But then it's just that kind of catch 22 where they just drop back in. They just kind of look to defend the lead as opposed to going and, you know, scoring the second goal and win the game. Like, that would be the most frustrating thing, was because it could have gone toe to toe with Italy, because even at one, like, if it's a 1-0, if they had pushed for the second goal and they get caught, it's only 1-1, and you just have to regroup and kind of like, and you can kind of go back to playing a bit more reserve football. That'll be the frustrating thing for them. They didn't create a lot of chances, especially with, like, you know, the attacking players we go on about. It's just kind of, we're happy to try and push away the Italian storm all the time. Like, there was one period where Italy, like, had 72% possession against England. Now, that's unheard of, really. You know, regardless of who, the only team that could potentially do that to England, I think, is Spain. But they do that without going anywhere, and that's kind of their philosophy. But for Italy, who, you know, if you look back at some of the group games, they didn't have that much amount of possession against lesser teams than England. So I think that's the, it's very difficult, you know, for me to sit here, because I've not been in that situation, to kind of say, like, were they nervous? You know, the expectations, you know, you're there, you get the goal ahead, you're trying to be strong, you're trying to be solid, you're trying to, like, can we weather the storm and then catch them on the counter-attack? And I think that's the real big disappointing thing, was they weren't able to actually create chances on the counter-attack. Now, obviously, as I joined you, I heard Owen saying there, like, you know, the Chiellini pullback on Saka, they are masters at the crappy little fouls, like, where they just kind of bump someone down or grab hold of someone, a little needless foul that we would regard as yellow card, but the Italians just, the masters at it, and they seem to get away with it all the time. And they did knock England, you know, two or three times when they did look like they were going to counter, but same time, that, I think that's the biggest disappointment, not the penalties.
David, could I ask, is that a kind of a subconscious thing that happens in a team where your setup and the team's philosophy almost looks as if it's reflecting the scoreline? So as you say there, England kind of went into their shell sitting on that 1-0 lead. Like, is that subconscious, or is that a reasoned decision, and is that a tactical reaction to sitting on that 1-0 lead?
I wouldn't say it's a tactical reaction. Once England, like, look, they'll have their game plans. You imagine the manager's last, you know, few words are keep it tight, be solid, look to get on the ball, look to create chances. We're playing with the wing backs. Can we get the wing backs higher up? You know, he'd gone through everything, and then you score straight away. So it's kind of like, oh, we're now winning. And it's like, we're winning and this is great. And we're going to win. Like, you know, if we keep a clean sheet from now on, we win the tournament. And you can guarantee at halftime, he'll have said, like, we need to be braver on the ball. We need to try and, you know, keep hold of it in Italy's half. But clean sheet wins us the Euros. And then it's not a case of, like, I'm telling everyone to stay back and defend, but it's just natural instinct. As a player on the pitch, you do tend to drop that extra 2 or 3 yards further back, because you're thinking, if we can keep this clean sheet, then we win the tournament. But it's double dutch. It's a horrible game to play, and, you know, they got caught out in the end.
Is that essentially because he doesn't quite have a defined philosophy or a style of play? You wouldn't say that, like, you can look at his team and go, that's a Gareth Southgate team, the way you can look at a Klopp team or a Tuchel team or any of the world's great managers at the moment. tend not to be reactive to the opposition. They say, well, this is how we're going to play and we're going to be able to inflict our game week in, week out on weak opposition and on good opposition. Obviously, we pay attention. And when they have the ball, we work harder. But with Southgate, there's a lot of the horses for courses worked up to this point, but maybe there is a limit.
Very difficult, because I think with the amount of time you have internationally to actually implement a style, you look at the group of players that you've got, obviously Manchester United players, Manchester City players, Liverpool players who play different styles. Like, does Harry Kane kind of fit what Southgate wants? Probably not, but he is so good at what he does for Spurs that they're now trying to kind of almost accommodate him, that he can, like, it worked perfectly in the semi-final, that he can drop in, like, get on the ball, make put balls on the side. I think it's very difficult for Southgate to kind of implement a style. Like, I think if you go through the other national teams, there's no great philosophy with them. You know, the Italians looked obviously high press and kind of get after you, but that there's no great magic to that. That's, I think it's very kind of difficult to look at a philosophy. It takes a lot of time. You need a lot of time, like, to work on it. Obviously, when Gareth or England would have played Wednesday after beating Denmark, like, the players who played, obviously going to extra time, they won't have trained Thursday or Friday. Then Saturday would be a light session where they'll run through, you know, tactics or whatever. And then it's Sunday, it's game day. It's very difficult to, you know, international football certainly comes around, like, a lot faster, and there's only a short amount of period between the days. So it is very difficult to kind of implement the style. But I know what you're saying, that you'd kind of like to see some similar patterns, that if players come off the bench,
yeah,
it kind of rotates into one. And that's...
No, it's fair enough to have...
the hard part.
But it's fair enough to have, like... So I will be able to have a... I'm tactically flexible enough to go 3 at the back if I need to. I'm tactically flexible enough to go 4-4-2. That's fine. But it's like what you do when you have that shape. That's... that, you know, I think it probably comes from the selection of the midfielders. Like, Declan Rice actually did play really well in the game last night, and he was a bit more aggressive with the ball than we've seen before. Up to this point, it's definitely been get the ball, keep it, shuffle it around. But actually, there's probably a bit more to his game. I think there's probably a bit more to Calvin Phillips' game as well. It's just they weren't encouraged to do that. They were encouraged to just be defensive. And I don't know, like, is there no room for Grealish in the team, particularly if Foden is injured? Would that not have helped you to keep the ball, particularly in that second half? Just, like, run the ball back and forward, draw some fouls, keep possession, give your team a bit of a rest. But he hasn't put Grealish in the team enough over the last 18 months to give him the opportunity to bet in or to win his trust. And they're the concerns that you would have in the longer term.
No, definitely. And that's the hardest part. You can tell that Gareth doesn't trust Grealish defensively. That there's no doubting his ability going forward. His ability to create chances, even to, you know, obviously win fouls, get free kicks in good areas. But there's obviously a question mark over him defensively. Gareth feels that he's not reliable enough to do the more or less the number 10 role. That's why he went with Mason Mount the other games, because Mason Mount will work harder. So Gareth will obviously feel that Mason brings more to the table. And I think that's something that Jack needs to learn. It has to kind of go both ways, because that's what Gareth wants. But at the same time, though, Jared, they were two penalties away from, you know, winning competition. So
it's the thing, isn't it? Yeah,
it's so difficult to call, because, well, it's so close.
It's true, right? But France won the World Cup, right? So therefore, everything Deschamps did in retrospect is brilliant. But actually, you do feel like with that group of players, Deschamps could have won the World Cup, and now they could be European champions as well if they had a style of play that actually got the best out of the team. Do you know, like, if Klopp or Guardiola was in charge of the England team or the French team, I think they'd be much better. I think they'd be, like, swashbuckling in the style of Spain winning back-to-back tournaments. And that's the opportunity that France had. It feels like that's the opportunity that England have at the moment. But I'm not sure that they're going to realise it, because Deschamps and Southgate have a definite, look, we're not going to get beaten. And more than likely, one of my superstars is going to score or do something really good. And that gives me a chance of winning the tournament. I understand it. I totally understand it. But, like, when it comes down to it, you lose on penalties.
Yeah, and then the flip side of that, like, Deschamps will say, well, I won the World Cup. You know, it's such a difficult one. I kind of get where you're going, but it took Jurgen a long time to implement his style at Liverpool, likewise Guardiola at City, before they started both having success. So it's Gareth true. Unfortunately, Gareth doesn't have the time. All international managers don't have the time. In terms of, like, in Ireland, we've always said that about Stephen. Like, he wants to change a lot of things, but it's very difficult for him to come in. That's why this kind of summer one, where he had a lot of time leading into the games, like, that he can then sit down and go through things with players. Like, major tournaments, you're preparing for the team you're playing. You're not... It probably is the international approach of, if you look at it, you're almost setting up to play your opponents, as opposed to what is our philosophy, what is our style, what are we trying to implement, something to take us forward. But it's more, you're gearing every formation, every style towards your opponent, you know, just to win the game and get a result.
Does that mean then that the opportunity for new faces in this squad over the next 18 months should actually be a little bit less than you would expect in an ordinary 18-month window, David? Should he basically pick his 30 men or whatever he's going to be to whittle down over the course of the next year and a half, because they are so close?
I still think, like, in... Like, look, 3 years ago, they played, obviously, in the World Cup semi-final against Croatia. Midfield was Jordan Henderson, Dele Alli and Jesse Lingard. 3 years, look how much that's changed. Two of those players aren't in the squad. Jordan was a substitute. Like, yes, it's 12 months' time or 18 months' time. You just, there could be more and more players coming through. Like that boy, Jude Bellingham, if he goes back to Dortmund, has another fantastic season, he'll be knocking on the door to start in the World Cup. There's no doubt in that. Then you're looking at Phil Foden, another 12 months experience. There's loads of players. And they'll be, look, it's, I'm almost jealous of the array of talent that England brings through. They'll produce more players. There'll be some players will appear out of nowhere. You think of someone like Mason Greenwood, you know, if he gets a lot of minutes this season, scores a lot of goals. So I wouldn't say they're set in stone in the players that they have right now. Look, don't get me wrong. A large majority of them will still be involved in the World Cup. But there will be other players that appear and will have good seasons and put their hands up, and it'll be interesting to see.
On the flip side then, what does last night do for the reputation of Roberto Mancini? I think that maybe there was a sense that we underrated him a little bit after his time in the Premier League, despite kind of guiding Manchester City to possibly the most famous final day Premier League title win ever. I presume that that goes the other way entirely now, and he's up in esteemed company after last night.
No, definitely, isn't it? Like, the horrible thing for Mancini is kind of Guardiola came in, you know, after, after Pellegrini, wasn't it? Mm. But, like, he's gone on and had so much success that nearly anyone before him is forgotten about. But if you ever listen to any, you know, certainly with Mancini being involved with Italy, the players that, you know, played under him, even Mika Richards is one that we see a lot of. He spoke really highly of Mancini, that all the players liked him. I know Stevie Ireland didn't like him because I saw something Stevie did, but that's fair enough. That, look, he's gone and taken an Italy team that didn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup. I think they went on, was it like 15 clean sheets in a row? They're now 34 games unbeaten. It's just remarkable what he's done that. And he's brought an exciting Italian team back to Italy. Like, Italy has always been one of the, you know, the powerhouses in European football. They've always been thereabouts. And you always want to see Italy competing in these competitions. But Mancini has kind of brought that life back into the football culture over there. And, you know, he's gone down in history in Italian football, winning the Euros. So it's always nice when you call a team before the tournament to win it, and then they go on and win it. So fair play, Roberto, you listen to me.
There you go. And, I mean, all we were missing was Immobile, who was bloody useless, by the way. Whatever you did, whatever curse you put on him.
Oh, jeez. I would, like, obviously tipping him to be top goal scorer. I kind of went with the romantic idea of, you know, whichever country wins it, you know, one of their players will be the top scorer. If I'd said Insigne, I'd probably got left off, but I said Immobile. Like, he's banged 30 plus goals the last few years for Lazio. But he just looked like he couldn't hit a barn door. But at the same time, he's sitting in some, or lying in some hotel room with his winner's medal around his neck. So I can't exactly give him any stick.
But, like, I mean, it's substitute made at 55 minutes in the game, David. Like, I mean, if you flip the script, does Gareth Southgate make that sub when he sees it in black and white, or does he say he'll come good eventually?
But at that moment in time, England were winning 1-0. I think it was the 67th minute that he scored. So you're kind of thinking, we're okay. I'm going to have to look to change something. But, oh yeah, we're dissecting every decision here.
Yeah, that's what happens. And
that's the hard thing, is kind of like, well, even Gareth, and he'll relive the game through his head. If I'd done this, if I'd done that. Well, look.
But like, think about it. The tournaments matter so much. They're still singing about 66, and they're still singing about 96, and we're still talking about 2002, because tournaments matter way more than anything else. Like, we never forget this. You never get those decisions back. And that's why we love the tournament so much. This was a bloody brilliant tournament. The extra teams, the fans around Europe, I don't know. It really made me feel like international football is back.
I couldn't agree more with you. Like, going back to whatever day, was it a Thursday when Spain played Croatia and France played Switzerland? That day of football, those games were just unbelievable. Even going back to the earlier start where, you know, the Netherlands played Ukraine, and then like Ukraine kind of miraculously come back into the game and then get beat. Like, the tournament was just unbelievable. All the games, bar probably England-Scotland, that was an awful game. But the majority of them were very, very good, and they were very entertaining. And I don't want it to end. And now, like, I'm excited that the Premier League is coming back, but like, it was brilliant. And I think for a lot of like kind of the younger generation, obviously being that extra year, not seeing the, like, obviously in Ireland, we'll remember Italia 90, you know, 94. It was kind of like, it's that buzz. And that's the one thing I've said to my wife, like, I'm so desperate for Ireland to get back to major competition, simply because of the lift. Because obviously I'm living in England, but the lift that football team has given this country is just unbelievable. I'm desperate for Ireland to get back so I can jump on the bandwagon and get carried away.
Yeah, I think we all are. Are you going to give us just a little blast of time to say goodbye? Come on, you were 100% correct. You picked the dark horses weeks and weeks and weeks out. You need to celebrate this, David. It's a moment in any man's life when you accurately predict. Come on.
I'll meet you in the middle of the road. I'll do Rapper's Delight.
Okay.
Okay, let's go.
Yeah.
Okay. I said a hip hop, a hippie to the hip, hip hop. You don't stop the rocket to the bam, bam, boogie. Say up, jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to be. Now what you hear is not a test. I'm rapping to the beat. And me, the groove, I'm going to try to move your feet. You see, I am Wonder Mike, and I'd like to say hello. From the black to the white, the red and brown, the purple and yellow. But first, I got to bam, bang, the boogie to the boogie. Say up, jump the boogie to the bam, 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 boogie. Let's rock. You don't stop. Rocky rhythm. So far, make your body rock. Well, so far, you've heard my voice, but then I brought two friends along. Next on the mic is my man, Jer. Come on, Jer, sing that song.
David Tyler.
Woo! It's amazing.
It's been a while since I've done that.
It's amazing what England getting knocked out on penalties in the final. I love it. We'll do it to anybody. David, good stuff. Go on.
Well, I did call Italy from the very beginning.
You did. So. You had a great tournament. Thanks a million.
Cheers, guys.
Enjoy.